I don't think I'm the only person here who's had a difficult year or two. I know that's fairly blanket for all of us with COVID and the experience we've had of illness and of being separated from loved ones. And even if we haven't done too badly ourselves in the last year and a half or so, we often do, don't we, find that life can be sad and bewildering and difficult. Each one of us has all sorts of challenges and problems in our lives that are just simply bigger than we are. And I've been learning a lot recently about how valuable and precious it is to get encouragement from people, and in particular encouragement from other Christians who can point me towards God, who can help remind me that if I am a Christian, I have always got bigger and better reasons to be joyful than there are reasons to be sad. It's one of the beautiful things about being a Christian. The universe is ultimately for us a safe and happy place. And so it can be really easy, though. I think I've been on both sides of this, to say those kind of things in quite a flippant or casual way. I wonder if anyone's told you when you've had a problem, said, "Oh, just pray about it," you know, or just trust God. Yeah, you know, I generally find that any kind of emotional or spiritual advice or input that begins with the word "just" is almost always badly lacking. And so I'm going to suggest this morning that whatever problems you are facing, whatever the kind of shadows on your well-being are at the moment, whether it's just a few things in the background that upset you and worry you, whether it's things that are very, very real and very present to you this morning, I'm going to suggest to you this morning that your heart can be filled to the very brim with joy by worshipping and enjoying the living Lord, the God of our rescuer, Jesus Christ. But rather than say "just praise God," rather than just tell you that in a flippant or casual way this morning, I want us to dive into this psalm that will help us to put some bones on that, will help us to understand what we mean when we say that. Because if it doesn't become real to us, if it doesn't actually make a difference in our lives, talking about God, well, it can just become pious twaddle, can't it? Cheap platitudes, worthless religion, and we can throw these words around. I just trust God, just enjoy Him. And I think Psalm 95 is a really, really good window into the how and the why of worshipping and enjoying God. That's where Psalm 95 really helps me. It has a name in Latin. We use this psalm in the life of the church and have done for centuries. It's called the Venite, which means to come in Latin. If you pray morning prayer, or if you remember from when we used to do morning prayer in church here over the last few months, we pray this psalm quite regularly. So if you're doing morning prayer each day on Zoom, you know, so Sheila must have prayed this psalm several hundred times in the last year or so, and all those others who are regular on morning prayer. It's an invitation. So that first word, it says come. Come, it's an invitation to know God. As I said at the beginning, for most of the time, for most of us, God is a bit of a smudge. Someone a bit unimportant, and perhaps occasionally in moments of particular hardness or difficulty, we might reach out or cry to Him. He's kind of a bit peripheral. And you know, I was reading something this week that said, when hopefully, you know, in centuries to come, when they're looking back at our era, when they're looking back at the 20th century and the early 21st century, they will say that ours was the era where the people who indulged unwarrantedly great thoughts about humanity and scandalously pitiful thoughts about God. So to worship God is to ascribe Him value, to say, no, He's not pitiful, He's actually really massive and really important and life-changingly brilliant and beautiful. I thought a really good example, I heard this elsewhere and I've adapted it, but I wonder who here ever watches the Antiques Roadshow. Can you put your hand up if you ever watch this program, the Antiques Roadshow? So one or two of us. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. You need to be really, really honest with me. So I think the most interesting times in the Antiques Roadshow are where the value of what is being brought to the expert is wildly different from what the person thought they were. You know, it's about, no, so that could go two ways, can't it? So someone brings something that they think is really good, and the expert goes, actually, sorry, it's not great. And they come away a bit crestfallen. And then sometimes the opposite happens. They come and they go, we've had this dusty thing knocking around. And they go, this is worth loads of money. So I'm going to ask you which of those you enjoy watching the most. You have to be really honest with me. So if you enjoy the ones the most where their thing is not as valuable as they thought, so they come away thinking really crestfallen, who enjoys those ones the most? Am I the only one? I think I am the only one. And so that means the rest of you are far pure in heart, because that means hands up if you enjoy the ones where they find out it's worth much more than they thought. Oh, you're just nicer people than I am. That's my conclusion. So I think one of the best examples for thinking about how we worship and enjoy God is this. I'd like you to imagine that was you. There was some dusty old vase in your loft, and it had been kicking around the family for ages, and nobody quite knew how you'd come to have it and who inherited it from whom. And you just think to yourself, you know, Antiques Roadshow's in town, let's just go and find out. And you go there, and you show it to the expert, and as she looks at it, this vase, she goes pale. And she whispers to a couple of her colleagues, and they come round and they all look at it, and then they tell you that this vase is actually a lost masterpiece that's worth hundreds of thousands of pounds. Can you just imagine that's you? So the difference is, you've always had that vase in your house, haven't you? But the difference is, now you know it. You're living in the light of just how wonderful this thing is. And I think that's what happens when we start to engage with God. That's what happens when we look into this psalm and we start to think we have something so wonderful, something so life-changingly good, and we're so often just putting God on the shelf to gather dust, rather than enjoying him directly. And I'm going to suggest that the psalm gives us three ways that we can know if God is gathering dust in your life, or whether God is front and center and you're rushing down to the insurers. So the first of those is, what makes you say, wow? What leads your heart to feel a sense of awe and wonder? The second of those questions is, what is it that makes you bow down and surrender in humility and obedience? So what is it in life that makes you just say, you are in charge, not me, I'm going to do what you say? And then the third question is, whose voice do you listen to and trust? Where do you get your sense of peace and satisfaction from? And this psalm shows us, I think, what a true worshipper looks like. If you want to turn to it with me, please do. If you've got a Bible time and you like to, it's on page 602. If you want to read along, you're very, very welcome to do that. Because this psalm has got different ways to worship God and different reasons to worship him in those different ways. And the first of those is right at the very beginning. It says, come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. In verse 3, for the Lord is a great God, the great King above all gods. In his hand the depths of the earth, and the mountain peaks belong to him. The sea is his, and his hands form the dry land. This is an emotional reaction, isn't it? It says, come sing. You tend to sing happily if you're feeling excited about something. And the thing to be excited about from this part of the psalm is that God made everything over all of it. And the way that verses 4 and 5 talk about this, I think we miss it. But basically verse 4 and 5 says, in his hand are the depths of the earth. So that is kind of like the underground, the underworld. So for the people who were reading this psalm originally, they'd have called it Sheol, the place of death. You know, maybe you're more familiar with the idea of Hades from the Greek mythology. So the depths of the earth are in his hand. And the mountain peaks as well. Now, for those of us who've been born the other side of the Romantic movement, And we immediately, I think, enjoy mountains when we see them. We think they're breathtaking, don't we? But for people in these days, mountains were a lot less spectacular. They were just things that happened to be there, maybe useful. But what people did do with the mountains was worship gods and sky spirits at the top of the mountains in this part of the world. That's why when David in one of the Psalms says, I look to the hills, where's my God? He's saying, because look, I can see these shrines all around. I can see these statues, these poles that are worshipping other gods. And he says, well, they belong to God. The sea is his, for he made it. I love the sea. I enjoy seeing it. Not as much as some people in my family do, but I really, really enjoy seeing the sea and just feeling that sense of God's bigness, and it's beautiful. But in those days, for these people, the sea was a dark, chaotic, dangerous place. You know, here be monsters, the Leviathan. The sea was not a place for the people of Israel that they liked to think about. And they're saying, even the sea is in God's hands. And then finally, at the end of verse 5, his hands form the dry land. That's where we all live. So all these elements of reality are beyond our access. They're strange and scary mysteries to us, but to God, they are under his command and under his control. And the answer to the question of all comes, everything around you, everything you see, is a gift from the God who made the world. And a part of the reason God made the world he did, the way made the world the way he did, is because he wants it to delight you. So just a couple of little things I've just come across just literally this week. I found out both of them about insects, actually. I was just reading an article about something. Did you know midges, those tiny, tiny little flies that buzz around and bite you? Does anybody know how many times they beat their wings every second? Adam knows this because I talked about that. Let's see if someone else can get. How many, just have a guess with me, how many times a second does a midge beat their wings? Yes, Amy?
I'm going to guess
150. Any, how many times a second does a midge, you know, those tiny little insects? Adam, nice and loud. No, it is time really right. It's 1,000 times a second. So in the time of 1 second, a little midge will beat his wings or her wings 1,000 times. That is mind-boggling, isn't it? The other one I learned this as well. There is a super colony of ants. I don't know if anyone heard about this. It's nothing to be worried about, I promise. There's a super colony of ants that goes all the way down the south coast of Europe. So it starts in Spain and goes round, all the way round to Greece. There's multiple queens, but there's a single super colony of Argentinian ants. So God sees and knows every nuance. I mean, ants are incredible things. Each individual ant is so stupid. But as a unit, they are incredibly complex creatures. They're amazing things. And so just when we learn about things like this, one of our reactions should be, God, you are incredible. You make these things that we could never even begin to understand. It's one of the reasons why David Attenborough is one of my favourite worship leaders. I don't think he acknowledges God, but the programmes he does lead me to enjoy God more. So that's the third thing. Do we respond to God? Go, wow. That's a really good sign. Secondly, as we see in verse 6, come, let us bow down in worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. So that's a bit harder, isn't it? It's quite easy, or relatively easy, to watch a nature documentary and go, that's incredible. God, you are really, really good at making things. But to actually bow to him in humility and surrender is far harder. We love the idea of a God who's big. We love the idea of a God who's there for us, who keeps us safe. We're a lot less keen on a God who commands our total obedience. Jesus speaks very, very plainly about this. He says, anyone who loves me will obey my teaching. My Father will love them, and we will come to them and make our home with them. She says, if you love me, you will obey my teaching. And the reason for that is not just because God is so big, which he is, but because he's our God. He's our shepherd. In verse 7, we see that he's our God. We are the people of his pasture. We're under his care. So we don't obey God simply because he's so big, but because he's our shepherd. He's our protector. Day by day, moment by moment, the battle of the Christian life, it's really hard work. is to give our surrender to God in each and every moment. Not because he belongs to us, but because we belong to him. I mean, what a thought, the supreme God, the maker of everything you see, moved heaven and earth so that you would be his. He sank to the very darkest depth. There was nowhere he wouldn't go to get us back. That's why some people, that's why we sing sometimes, love so amazing, so divine, demands my love, my life, my soul, my all. So the worship leader who's leading us through this psalm of worship tells us, look, obey him, enjoy him, because we are his. So it's been a really, really upbeat psalm so far. We're just going to find the very last chunk of it. It changes gear. It gets a bit more challenging. It gets a bit more edgy. Because the question it asks there is, who are you going to listen to? So if you see in this second part of verse 7, it says, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as you did at Meribah. A really, really good question. I had to look it up, is what and where is Meribah? Why does this psalm talk about that now? And it takes us way back into the Bible. It takes us back into the book of Exodus. So this is in the desert where God has rescued his people from Egypt. So if you know the Moses and the burning bush and Pharaoh, let my people go, the plagues, the Passover, the escape in the night. So God's people are in the desert. And they have been rescued spectacularly by God. And they're on their way to the promised land, the place of rest, the place of milk and honey, the place where there is all sorts of riches for them. And what do they start doing? They start moaning. They stop listening to God. They get impatient. And at one point, at Meribah, they moan at God in the desert and say, look, we can't see any water. And they say to Moses, why have you brought us out here to die of thirst? God gives them water. They don't die of thirst. But because of their mistrust and their moaning, he says to those particular people, you are not going to enter the promised land. You won't enter it because you don't listen to me. Because you have ignored me and you don't trust me, God says you will never find rest. And then later on in the Bible, the writer of Hebrews picks up on this psalm, and the writer of Hebrews tells us that there is rest for us. It's found in the gentle yoke of Jesus Christ. In him, we are offered a rest that's far better than the promised land. Far better than any geographical area or nation state could ever be. Jesus offers us a rest from all of the exhausting ways that worshipping other things than God tires and deflates and ruins us. All those things that we choose to plug the hole in our life that belong to God. God says, Jesus says, I'm going to give you a way out of that, but it involves trusting me and listening. And so as we finish looking at Psalm 95, is today the day? It says there in verse 7, it's a really good word there, today, if you hear his voice, so not tomorrow, not next week, today, if you hear his voice, is today the day where you listen to God, perhaps, for the very first time? Is this morning the morning when you say, God, I have not taken you seriously, and you deserve to be taken seriously? Is today the day where you put away those things that are not worthy of your worship, they're not worthy of your attention and your love, those things that will never ever satisfy you? And is today the day that you become more of a Psalm 95 person than you were before? I'm going to suggest, just as we finish the reading, I'm going to ask us to stand and we're going to actually read this psalm together, just from our Bible. So again, if you've not got it to hand and it's a problem, please don't do it, but please do stand. On page 602, we're just going to read it straight from the Bible. So please do join in as best as you feel able to. And so let's just read and pray Psalm 95 together. Come, let us sing for joy to the Lord. Let us shout aloud to the rock of our salvation. Let us come before him with thanksgiving and extol him with music and song. For the Lord is the great God, the great King above all gods. In his hand are the depths of the earth, and the mountain peaks belong to him. The sea is his, for he made it, and his hands formed the dry land. Come, let us bow down in worship. Let us kneel before the Lord our Maker. For he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care. Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as you did at Meribah, as you did that day at Massa in the desert, where your fathers tested and tried me, though they had seen what I did. For 40 years I was angry with that generation. I said, they are a people whose hearts go astray, and they have not known my ways. So I declared on oath in my anger, they shall never enter my rest.